Good morning. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I am Pieta. I have the good pleasure of welcoming my good friend, IQ Al-Rasuli, to the program. IQ has written a three-volume series called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. If you were to Google IQ Al-Rasuli, Lifting the Veil, it'd probably take you directly to the Amazon page that offers his books. I highly recommend them. I think that IQ does the best job of anyone I have ever met of exposing the truth about this horrid religion. IQ, how are you this morning?
I'm very, very, very well, because
good.
Obama is in bad shape.
yes, he is. I want to share the opening statement from an article that you sent me. You might have sent it last night. I don't know if it was last night or this morning. You're in Europe, so it's actually evening for you, so good evening to you. This is an article that appeared on Arab News. Now, naturally inclined to disassociate the problems being experienced in the Middle East from Arab. I think they have nothing to do with race. They have all to do with religion. So just the idea of Arab bothers me to some extent. But nonetheless, here's the opening statement of the article you sent me. According to the news media, the Arab Spring caught the world by surprise on December 18, 2010. I will, however, add that the Arab Spring did not come out of the blue. It is the culmination of years of political corruption, human rights violations, sectarianism, poor education systems, and unemployment. To sum it all up, the Arabs were not fighting the enemy. They were sleeping with it. What is your thoughts on the statement that was published in Arab News, which, by the way, at the headline of Arab News is that we wish to offer you all a blessed Ramadan?
It's okay. The author is one of the most remarkable men I've ever encountered online or offline. He used to be a commodore in the Saudi Navy and retired.
Mm-hmm.
Every single article he writes is incisive. He cannot say it is the fault of Islam, because he'll be dead. But he says it in a roundabout way. I mean, what you just said, he said the Arabs self-destruct. You and I, we have always said that the Quran and Hadith self-destruct.
Right. Well, what we have said is that even if you were not to have invested the 10,000 hours that you and I have devoted to exposing what the five oldest Islamic sources actually reveal about the true nature of the repulsive man that was Muhammad and the reprehensible dogma that has become known as Islam, even if you don't bother to take the time to study the scriptures that are the basis of this politicized religion, all you have to do is open your eyes. Where are the most hellish places on earth to live? Where is there the most poverty, the most unemployment, the greatest abuse of human rights, the poorest treatment of women? Where is there the most violence and death? Where is there the most hypocrisy and the least inventiveness, the least freedom, the least opportunity on planet Earth? Well, that's
Islamic.
Just happened. Yeah, Islamic countries. I agree with you. What he said is that, and if you recognize that Islam, from a Muslim perspective, is equal parts political dogma and religious dogma, a Muslim would never separate the political and religious aspects of Islam. In fact, they cherish the fact promote Islam as the ultimate solution for humankind because it is a comprehensive political and religious system. When he says that the Arab Spring should not have been a surprise, that it did not come out of the blue because it is an accumulation of years of political corruption, what is the political basis of every country in the Arab world and therefore in the Middle East? What is the basis of their political system?
Sharia.
Yeah, Islam. Sharia is the law that, and therefore the politic of Islam. The law or politic of Islam is based exclusively on the words and deeds of Muhammad. who was, by the way, the most reprehensible man who ever lived. This is a legal system and a political system based upon a man that was a terrorist, a mass murderer, a pedophile, a rapist, a slave trader, a kidnapper, a warmonger. He was the epitome of bad. You think Adolf Hitler was bad? Muhammad was worse. All right. The second thing he said is human rights violations. Are there any human rights in Islam?
None whatsoever. Not even to Muslims.
You're right. So the very purpose of Islam is to remove human rights, including free will and choice. Freedom.
Correct. Yes.
So he has said Islam, and he has said Islam. Sectarianism is, there are two words that describe the systems that control human behavior. Secularism and sectarianism. Could you distinguish the difference between those two words for our audience?
Well, secularism is the separation of church and state, or mosque and state.
Correct.
And that's the most important item, because it allows different religions to coexist. In
right.
Islam, it is forbidden.
Okay, but he did not use secularism, did he?
No,
he used sectarianism. So sectarianism, what is the meaning of that word?
That the Muslims who hate the Jews, the Christians, the Buddhists, the Hindus, that's sectarianism.
Yeah, sectarianism is religion. It's just a word to say that the government, that the influence over the people is religious as opposed to political. So he has now said that the problem, the enemy for the Middle East, for the lands that Arabs occupy, that the enemy is political corruption, which is Sharia, Islam. It's human rights violation. Well, Islam means submission. Right. Islam. Right. Islam means submission, and there are no rights when you surrender and you submit. And then he said the third thing in this list was sectarianism, which means religion. Well, what is the only accepted religion throughout the Arab Middle East?
Islam.
Is there any other accepted religion?
None whatsoever.
Is there any influence of any religion in the Middle East, the Arab world, other than Islam?
None.
So when he wrote sectarianism, what he was saying is Islam, correct?
Absolutely. But he couldn't say it in plain language.
Okay. The next thing he says is poor education systems. In the Arab Middle East, in the Islamic world, what is the primary focus of the, let's use the correct term, of the indoctrination of young minds? What is their primary subject? The most important subject, the study of the Quran. Right. And is the Quran the dumbest book ever written?
To call it dumb is an insult to dumbness.
Okay. There. That's, you know, the Quran is so poorly written, ladies and gentlemen. It is errant beyond hope from a scientific point of view, from a historic point of view. It's very poorly plagiarized. It is twisted. It has no chronology. It has no contextual order. It claims to be pure Arabic, and yet every important word in it is actually Hebrew. There are no transitions. Everything that it says is so stupid. I mean, its basic claim is that it confirms the Torah. And yet it's every word contradicts the Torah. You literally have to be either ignorant or irrational to embrace the Quran.
But they are irrational. We have 1,500 million human beings who are totally irrational.
That is correct. So poor education system is a direct derivative of what in the Arab Middle East?
Islam.
Right. All right. In Islam, the first Muslims, we have hadith about the first Muslims. They left Mecca because of the satanic verses and because of Muhammad's claim to have ridden the winged ass to Jerusalem to meet with the bigwigs in the non-existent temple. He made a laughing stock of himself, and so as a result of the satanic verses and his imaginary ride on the winged ass, he was tossed out of Mecca in shame, and he ended up in Yathrib, today's Medina. Is there any indication in Medina that the first Muslims were able to be productive economically?
Never.
In fact, Muhammad never worked.
It's so important. Most of his life, Muhammad never worked.
Right. And so,
it's never written anywhere in Hadith that he worked.
Yes, that is correct. Never worked. Now, in fact, the hatred of Jews in the Quran, isn't it a direct result of the fact that the first Muslims, because they did not work, that they were dependent upon loans that were provided by the Jews in Yathrib, today's Medina? Is that not correct? So they became totally dependent on loans and handouts by the Jews. In fact, they worked. The ones that worked would have had to work for the Jews, but they were unwilling to work for them. They were unwilling to do anything productive. So when when those loans came due, what did they do to the Jews who had loaned them the money to so that they could eat, so that they could survive? In Yathrib, what did they do to those who had provided the loans?
Massacred them.
Yeah. So rather than pay back the loans because they had engaged, they used the money to establish businesses and farms and the like and work them so they could pay back the loans, they massacred them. And so it is the reason that the hatred exists between Muslim and Jew in the Quran is because the Jews loaned the Muslims money because they were not able and were not willing to work. And they rather than paying those loans back, they massacred the Jews. Now, after they had massacred the Jews, did they do anything else to the Jews relative to their property that tells you that the industry of Islam was very unique from a religious point of view? What became the industry of Islam?
Plunder. Plunder. Destruction.
Yeah, plunder. Pirating. The purpose of Islamic terrorism was not for military advantage. The purpose of Islamic terrorism was singular, and is proven in the Hadith and in the Quran. In fact, the eighth verse of the Quran was written to legitimize the only business activity that Muslims participated in, which was plunder. And it's entitled that stealing is lawful and good. We'll return with IQ al-Rasuli in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mizpah, as we are on every Friday during our second hour with IQ al-Rasuli. IQ sent me an article written by a former officer in the Saudi Arabian Navy that made a statement that did everything this author could possibly do to implicate Islam without actually saying Islam, so he is still alive and able to write another article. I'd like to read the opening paragraph again, IQ, now that we have talked about each of these aspects of Islam. According to news media, the Arab Spring caught the world by surprise on December 18, 2010. I will, however, add that the Arab Spring didn't come out of the blue. It is an accumulation of years of political corruption, Islam, human rights violations, Islam, sectarianism, Islam, poor education systems, Islam, and unemployment, Islam. To sum it all up, the Arabs were not fighting the enemy. They had embraced Islam. So I just added a few words here and there, but that's really what he said, isn't it, IQ?
He was saying that they were sleeping with the enemy, and the enemy is the Quran. By the way, the last minute of the last section.
Yes.
The chapter or Surah 8 is called Al-Anfal in Arabic, mm-hmm. which means the spoils of war.
Right.
I would like to recite it to our listeners. So important.
Okay.
The chapter, verse 1 only. It mm-hmm. says, they ask thee concerning things taken as spoils of war.
Mm-hmm.
Say, the spoils of war are at the disposal of Allah and the Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody with two brain cells of logic should come to one conclusion. Mm-hmm. Since Allah will not take any part of the spoils,
mm-hmm.
the spoils go all of it to Muhammad.
That's right.
So Allah has nothing to do with it.
Correct. That's correct. But what that says is that plunder is lawful and good. Stealing is lawful. Stealing is lawful. Now let's put this into the context of the time that the. This is one of the reasons I encourage people to read Prophet of Doom, because it takes each of the Quran surahs and puts them in chronological order into the context of Muhammad's life, so you know why Muhammad said that stealing is A-OK and that the recipients of what you've stolen is under the auspices, under the control of Muhammad. The eighth surah of the Quran was handled down on what's called the Battle of the Moon.
Badr,
which the Battle of the Moon. And this particular battle, what was the cause of this battle?
Muhammad was trying to plunder one of the caravans of the Quraysh people.
That is correct. So the entire purpose is Muhammad expressly sent his militants out to rob a caravan. Is that correct?
Well, I wouldn't call them militants. These were thugs and murderers.
Okay.
They're not militants.
Okay. So he sent his jihadists out, his thugs and murderers. He sent his jihadists out for the express purpose to rob a caravan. Is there any hint that there was any other purpose? Was he trying to spread Islam? Was there any hint that he was fighting a defensive battle and trying to protect his people? Or is 100% of the testimony we have regarding the Battle of Badr expressly associated with the purpose from Muhammad's own lips was that he wanted to rob the caravan?
Only to rob, and every single action he took after that in the 75 attacks that you mentioned many times, each and every one of them was to plunder.
Right. So the purpose of terrorism in Islam, and terrorism would be you send armed thugs, jihadists, out to terrorize, to attack civilians. That's the whole concept of terrorism. His purpose of terrorism was not to spread his religion. It was not to defend his religion. That was the only economics that kept his religion alive, which was using terrorism to plunder. Is that not correct?
Absolutely true.
Yep. So that is why there is poverty and unemployment in the Islamic world. Now, there happens to be a second reason that there's poverty and unemployment in the Muslim world. The only place where people are willing, the only conditions where people are willing to risk their labor and their capital to build businesses is those places where the rule of law applies, and that they know that if they invest their capital and they invest their labor to build a business, that the benefits, should they succeed, will not be stolen from them. And so you have to have the rule of law, you have to have a civil society for there to be economic productivity. In Islam, do these conditions exist?
Not in a single one of them. Not in a single 57 Muslim majority state.
So you can't trust someone who is devoted to a religion that is based upon deceit.
Absolutely. Cannot trust them.
We'll be back after the bottom of the hour commercial break with our conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli. We're talking about the consequence of Muslims sleeping with Islam, that they think that they're fighting an enemy. They think that the enemy is Israel and the United States, but in fact the enemy that is destroying Muslims, their primary foe, is Islam. In fact, when I wrote Prophet of Doom, I dedicated it to Muslims. They are the first victims of Islam. They are the primary victims of Islam. Now, this particular article, IQ, this author in this article, IQ, went on to say, this is why it's impossible to analyze and forecast the outcome of the Arab Spring. Now, I don't think that's the case. I think it's very easy to predict the future of the Arab Spring. The Arab world never looks at mirrors. Boy, that is true. In the tens of thousands of letters I have received from Muslims, my response in my own mind, and many times even writing to them, is first and foremost, you need to look in a mirror. If you want to understand why you're so hateful, why you're so enraged, why you're so misguided. Look in a mirror. But, you know, the way that nations, and to call the Islamic countries nations, I mean, they're personal fiefdoms in most cases, personal estates. The way that they control their people is that they always say the enemy, the great Satan, is out there, and we're protecting you from the great Satan, when in fact the real enemy is inside. That's very much like the United States, even today. The United States is saying, we're trying to protect you from all of those bad guys and bad influences, terrorism and global warming and all that sort of thing, when in fact the very people who are manipulating the controls of the government are the ones who are the enemy. So that's what this fellow is saying, isn't it? That the enemy is not the United States, it's not Israel, but in the Islamic world, the real enemy is Islam itself.
He is saying it, and I admire him for saying it, but the most important thing is what you said a few minutes ago. He is telling them, you cannot look in the mirror. Muslims
right.
and Arabs cannot look in the mirror because they will hate to see what they see.
Yeah, in fact, he wrote, we don't like to say mirror on the wall, because mirrors don't lie. And we don't want to know the truth. We can't handle it. And that's the fact. Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah, it's that, and it's true really of all religions, but it's especially true of Islam. Islam, it was extraordinarily well-crafted to deceive. And so a devout Muslim cannot handle the truth. They have no capacity to embrace the truth. They don't want to know it. They have no interest in it. They couldn't handle it if they saw it. And so there is never, ever a mirror held up in front of a Muslim.
They can't handle it. Exactly what the man said. This is the most remarkable thing about what he says. He is telling them exactly what the truth is. He's telling them the facts. But he cannot say, guys, although I'm one of you, it is Islam, it is the Quran, it is the Quran. He can't.
Right.
They'll kill him.
Yeah, they'll kill him. You know, in all of the news pundits that are talking about the upheaval now in Egypt, they all say that they all acknowledge that there's a growth in radicalization and that that perhaps is part of the problem. But are the Muslims who are in control of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Ennahda Party in Tunisia, the jihadists who now run Libya, the Wahhabist jihadists that are now the rebels in Syria, are they radicals?
They're not radicalized. They're
no.
not radical. They are
no.
Muslims.
Yep.
They are Muslims. All they're doing is they're following the instructions that are given to them by Allah, by Muhammad in the Quran.
So they're fundamentalists.
No,
they're fundamentalists. They're not radicals.
Absolutely. Fundamentalist.
Yeah. A radical is in a political or religious thought process is the radical offshoot. It's the, you know, that you have a vine and you got this one shoot that goes off in a different direction, all standing out there by itself. That's the concept of radical from a political and religious perspective. But instead, these guys are the biological, botanical definition of radical, which is from the root.
They are the clones of Muhammad.
Right. They are right from the root of Islam.
Every one of them is a clone of Muhammad. They're not radical.
There are 100% of them would be Salafists, would they not be?
Absolutely. Wahhabis, Salafis, all these names don't mean anything.
Okay, right. But a Salafist, what a Salafist is someone who is going to agree with, going to accept, going to try to follow the Salaf, which are the companions of Muhammad. So that's an individual who is going to make the example for his or her life the words and deeds of Muhammad. Correct?
Correct.
And so to be...
Right.
Right. So if you are going to be a Salaf and you're going to use Muhammad's words and deeds as your example, then you are going to be anti-Semitic, you're going to be racist, you're going to be going to promote the slave trade, you're going to promote decapitating anybody that you don't like, you're going to become a mass murderer, you'll be a jihadist, you'll be a rapist, you'll encourage pedophilia, kidnap for ransom will be considered a fine thing, plunder, stealing, you name it, that becomes the example that you're going to follow.
They have no choice. That is exactly what Muhammad was.
So
if they're going to follow Muhammad and his companions, they have to be as depraved as Muhammad and his companions.
So this Western mindset that our problem is radicalization, that, for example, the Shannara brothers and the Boston bombing, that they were radicalized as opposed to being fundamentalists, that by stating radicalization as the problem, are we not communicating the opposite of what's true?
Of course, the news media are perverting the facts deliberately. This is not a matter of stupidity. It is impossible to be stupid when you are reading the Quran. It tells you exactly what it intends to do. There's nothing ambiguous, even when you translate it to any language on planet Earth. It is a hideous document.
So the problem is,
when they say they are radicalizing or they are radical, they are actually perverting the truth and deceiving the American people.
Right. So the reality is that these Islamic jihadists who are now fixated on killing, which is really the if you wanted to know the signature of what's been called the Arab Spring, it would be Muslim killing Muslim. I mean, that is the primary symptom of what's known as the Arab Spring. While its cause is an Islamic Reformation, is what its cause is, a returning to fundamentalist Islam. Its symptom is Muslim killing Muslim. If you were to look at why that is the case, it has nothing to do with Muslims corrupting their religion, but instead entirely to do with the religion of Islam corrupting Muslims.
Absolutely. And yet it's so simple. I mean, the way you say it, it's simple, it's beautiful, it flows, it's logical. People are watching it 24 hours a day. What do they see? For the last 11 years, Muslims killing Muslims more than they're killing Jews, Christians, and Buddhists.
Yes.
And yet it doesn't sink in. In the human psyche, it doesn't sink in, because most people have absolutely no idea what Islam is all about. And the media perverts, the media aids and abets the jihadists by deceiving the American public.
Here's the concluding two paragraphs of the article you sent me, and I'd like to share it and then have you comment on it. Yes, the Arab Spring is a joke. I mean, a very bad joke. The Arab Spring is not about seeking democracy. It's about Arabs killing Arabs. He uses the term Arab instead of Muslim, but he intends to say Muslim killing Muslims.
I know that, and anybody who knows the subject knows that.
Right.
But he's saying it in the correct way.
Right, in the politically correct way, which is the only way he can have this published without being killed. It's about Arabs killing Muslims. Arabs killing Arabs, read Muslims killing Muslims. And this is why the Israeli soldiers are busy on the Golan Heights. They are not busy with loading ammunition. They are busy picking cherries and other fruits. What is more, they're also busy giving guided tours to show the world Syrian planes targeting civilians, Scud missiles destroying villages, and tanks attacking schools and mosques. What goes inside of Syria is horrific. Syrian men humiliate women in front of their relatives. They rape and kill the Muslim women. It is not only the killing that is ugly. We saw a Syrian kill another Syrian and then open his heart with a knife and take a bite out of its heart. It can't get any uglier than that. Now, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the ugliest of them all? Well, they are all ugly. It has turned out that the Arab Spring is not about a search for a democracy, for social justice, for better standards of living. The Arab Spring is all about the hate and sectarian violence. The hate and, what is sectarian again? Religion.
Religious discrimination.
It's about the hate that the religion of Islam inspires, is what he wrote there. The world didn't hear anything about rebuilding the countries or eradicating poverty. The talk is all about fighting among the same people from the same country, of killing one another. Just look at one of the oldest civilizations on earth, Egypt, a country that failed to bring one, just one iconic figure like Nelson Mandela or Martin Luther King, individuals who talk about peace and harmony and who are respected the world over. By the way, he didn't mention Gandhi, who Muslims hate because of the Pakistan-India debate. So he couldn't mention Gandhi. Not one who enjoys destroying his own country and killing. Not someone who enjoys destroying his own country and killing his own people. Islam has created a cult of death, a cult of hate, has it not?
This is why they shout proudly that we, Muslims, love death, while you, non-Muslims, love life.
Right.
They are zombies. These are not a human being.
Is it not the primary slogan? Right. Is not the primary slogan of those in the Muslim Brotherhood now who are massing in Egypt, saying we will either get the Muslim Brotherhood back in power or we will die?
Willing to die. The trouble is when you kill them, they start crying. I don't know why they're crying. Because when you kill them and they are dying as jihadists, they are ending up with the 72 virgins. So why are they crying? I don't get it.
Because the lie of the 72 virgins is as big as every other lie that permeates Islam. God does not reward killers with sexual conquests. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths when we have IQ Hour Rasuli on the program. The hour goes by way too quickly. There was another segment of this letter that you sent me, IQ, that I want to share and then have you comment on. He says, everyone knows the truth. We just won't admit it. During the Arab Spring, we saw our real faces in the mirrors. It shows that Arabs were never united and are now divided beyond anyone's imagination. We hate each other. Now, he goes on to say more than we hate the outside enemy. They don't have an outside enemy. They don't need one.
They never had one.
Never had one.
In fact, that's their own worst enemy.
That's one of the most interesting things about Islam is that Muslims know that Muhammad was a terrorist. They know that that he occupied himself primarily with fighting. They know that. But yet they will say that's okay because he was defending the first Muslims. But was he ever defending Muslims?
Never.
Never. Never once.
Never.
Never fought a single battle in the defense of Muslims. Ever.
No.
All of his battles were jihadist terrorist raids against civilian enterprises for the express purpose of plunder, of stealing.
Correct. Yada, you forgot something very important. Considering he is the guy who wrote the article, is a Muslim and a Saudi.
Right.
You missed the part, I'll tell you, because I want the American listeners to understand this. He said,
right,
after the attack by the Syrian army against his own people, he
right,
says, we saw many Syrians approach the Israeli fortified checkpoints in the Golan Heights.
Yes.
Not to attack Israeli soldiers, but to seek refuge and get medical attention. And he continues, I'm not talking about simple medical care. I'm talking about major surgeries like the 4-year-old Syrian girl who got a heart transplant at Wilson Hospital in Holon, Israel. This is the real Arab Spring. Syrians are hurting Syrians, and the Israelis are the ones who treat the Syrian wounds. It's remarkable.
Yeah, what he's doing here is pointing out the fact that Israel is the scapegoat. It's that all of the dictators in the Islamic world blame the poverty and the horrible conditions that Muslims live in their countries on the Jews. And yet the Jews are the ones that are actually compassionate and are moral and are performing life-saving surgeries on Muslims, because there's something that is different about the perceived enemy of Muslims, Jews, than the Muslims. And that is that Israel literally radiates that which is good, and these Islamic countries all radiate that which is extraordinarily evil.
And he's so, saying it.
And yes, if he's saying it.
This is the most remarkable thing about this article. He's actually saying it.
Right. So if Israel was forced by the West to give up the high ground of Judea and Samaria, which called the West Bank, as it was forced to give up Gaza, is that going to resolve the problem in the Islamic world?
Never.
No. Ever. And that's what he's saying, is that if Muslims were to eradicate Israel, then they would be without excuse.
Absolutely. None and, whatsoever.
And they would be as rotten as they ever were, but they would have no one to mend them when they savaged themselves.
Correct also.
That the only hope for Islam exists in Israel. And yet Israel is presented as the enemy to hide the fact that the real enemy is looking every Muslim in the face when they look into the mirror.
That's why they don't look at the mirror. That is exactly why they will refuse to look at the mirror, because they know it's rotten.
Now, what he says here is something that I have long suspected, which is that everyone knows the truth but won't admit it. What he is suggesting here is that the media, academicians, religious leaders, political leaders, military leaders, that they all really know the truth, that the problem is Islam, but they won't admit it. Do you agree with that?
I agree with you 100%.
That Barack Hussein Obama, as he constantly embraces and lifts up Islam and arms Islam and pushes the world towards more fundamentalist Muslims and therefore sacrifices so many souls to this horrid religion, that in your view, then, he knows the truth and is doing this deliberately, not only to harm Muslims, but to harm Americans.
Definitely. I've always said it, even before he was elected, that he's a closeted Muslim, and his purpose is the destruction of America.
So we are without excuse. We know the truth. We're just ignoring it. We have too few people who will admit it.
Correct.
Well, IQ, I receive it. You are one of the few who will admit it, and I appreciate your bold voice. Can't wait to talk with you this time next week.